You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for the Colorado Springs Gazette, read by Sue Frederick. This is being recorded on April 24th. Today, we will be reading the following main articles. CHSAA sanctions girls' flag football. Radar camera program approved. Words you can't say in the legislature. And following up with miscellaneous articles. CHSAA sanctions girls' flag football. Varsity basketball shot clock to be added. By Marcus Hill of the Gazette. What an eventful day for Colorado prep sports. After months of debate, CHSAA's Legislative Council on Tuesday voted 57-9 in favor of sanctioning girls' flag football starting in fall 2024. Five voters abstained from the decision. The Legislative Council also voted 40-30 in favor of adding a shot clock in the 2026-27 season for varsity basketball. The shot clock addition comes after months of discussions regarding the pros and cons of the system. When the Legislative Council met in January, a measure to add a shot clock failed, 43-28. The Basketball Committee met in February and changed verbiage in the proposal to exclude C-team and junior varsity and only use the clock in varsity contests. During Tuesday's meeting, many supporters reacted in celebration of the move, which some felt was long overdue. Finally, this is going to do wonders for Colorado student athletes and their viability at the next level. Jesse Bender, an assistant men's basketball coach at SUNY Canton, said on X, the app formerly known as Twitter. When clock usage begins in 2026-27, it will include boys and girls basketball and will be a 35-second shot clock. The shot clock will also remain in play in cases of overtime. For girls flag football, many expressed their satisfaction with the decision during the meeting and said they're prepared to adjust on the fly to any changes necessary to keep the sport afloat. There's an old expression that early feedback is better than late criticism, said Michael Hughes, Lakewood High School athletic director. We know there are some bumps and there are some hiccups with this, but speaking as an athletic director at Lakewood High School, this has been one of the best things that has happened to our school in my 7 years there. Girls' sports participation had been declining, but this has lifted our school up. Girls flag football began a pilot program in 2022, compiled of mostly Denver schools. This year, CHSAA added six more to the cohort, including four area schools, with Colorado Springs Christian School, Coronado, Ellicott, and Vanguard each having teams, bringing the total to 50 teams. After 2 years, more than 1,300 girls have participated in the sport, and girls flag football from the inaugural season to this year, participation grew 161%. They want to play girls' flag football, and there's not a good enough reason for us to stand in their way, said Kylie Russell, Adams 12 District Athletic Director. Let those of us who want to offer girls' flag football for our athletes figure out the hard stuff and pave the way. CHSAA's Legislative Council last added sports in 2019 when it sanctioned boys' volleyball, girls' wrestling, and unified bowling for the 2020-2021 season. Prior to that, the Legislative Council hadn't added any sports since the late 1990s when it sanctioned boys lacrosse in 1998 and had its first season in 1999. Today, your vote is for every girl in the state of Colorado, said CHSAA Board of Directors and Principal at Englewood High School, Ryan West. This is not about flag football. This is about what is right for girls in our state. Other notes. Track and field will eliminate the sprint medley relay event from future state meets. The sprint medley relay does not fall in compliance with National Federation of State High School Associations rulebook, and because of that, were running the event illegally, said Kevin Clark, Thompson Valley Director of Activities and Athletics. We're essentially sanctioning an event that is inequitable from the start. This would be like the three-point line being 3 feet closer for another team. Radar camera program approved. Colorado Springs Police authorized to implement technology to catch and fine speedy drivers, by Brianna Gent of the Gazette. The Colorado Springs City Council on Tuesday authorized the police department to implement a new camera program that will catch and fine drivers exceeding posted speed limits in certain areas of the city. The council voted 7-2 in favor of the system that uses radar technology to track and identify multiple speeders at once in residential areas, roadways that border parks, and in school and construction zones. Councilman Dave Donaldson and Mike O'Malley were opposed. This is an excellent program, Councilwoman Yolanda Avila said, adding that speeding is the number one complaint she receives from residents in her district. I think our constituents want something done. I think this is a really good step forward to work on this. Police leadership said Tuesday the speed safety cameras will reduce traffic-related deaths and free up police resources for other priorities. This technology gives Colorado Springs Police this ability as a force multiplier to give our cops out there the opportunity to do traffic enforcement on their own while at the same time use a tool that can assist us more efficiently, Colorado Springs Deputy Chief Dave Edmondson said. Speed is a leading factor in traffic injuries across El Paso County, Colorado Springs Commander Pamela Castro said. The most populous county in Colorado, El Paso in 2022 and 2023 led the state in traffic fatalities, she said. Colorado State Patrol previously reported 28% of the county's total traffic-related deaths in 2022 involved speeding. The program is an extension of the city's current red light photo program that identifies and fines vehicles that run red lights in 20 intersections in Colorado Springs. The police department plans to, in the future, contract 2 new vehicles equipped with special speed safety camera equipment that uses radar to track multiple lanes of traffic in one direction and photographs and records vehicles it identifies as exceeding the speed limit. The department will hire 2 new full-time civilian employees to operate the vehicles and record the violations, as Colorado law requires. Additional software will allow police staff to review, then decide whether to pursue the violation. Under state law, speeding violations caught by the camera program are counted as civil infractions. Police can't report the violations to the DMV, and no points are assessed for violations, said Chantel Withrow, the prosecution division chief in the city attorney's office. When the police department implements the program, they must notify the public for a 30-day period. After that, there is another 30-day period during which the city will only assess warnings and no fines for speeding violations caught on camera. After the warning period ends, drivers caught speeding in residential areas and on roadways near parks will be charged a $40 fine. Travelers caught speeding in school and construction zones will be assessed an $80 fine, Withrow said. Councilman Donaldson said he was concerned about implementing a program that would not do more than fine violators. It's kind of like a catch-and-release fishing, but there are no points on the license. There is no impact as far as drivers losing their driver's license, he said. Councilwoman Lynette Crowe Iverson pointed out that drivers who speed in school zones and are ticketed by a police officer receive higher fines and must attend municipal court for the violation. That's compared with drivers caught speeding in school zones with radar cameras who would receive lower fines and wouldn't be mandated to appear in municipal court if they paid the violation. Police officials said overall, the program will discourage violators from speeding. It can identify more speeders at one time than an individual police officer would be able to identify and ticket. That is the trade-off, Withrow said. Police officials could not yet estimate the potential cost of the program, saying they are still in the contracting process. In 2023, Colorado Springs' Red Light Photo Program received approximately $2.2 million in revenue, compared to its contract cost of about $1.1 million, Withrow said. The Speed Safety Camera Program would be an additional cost added to the Red Light Photo Program, but she and police officials expect it will be cost neutral, not costing the city out of pocket, Withrow said. Springs Police said they reached out to Aurora Police after that city announced it would end its speed safety camera program because it cost Aurora more than $610,000 but brought in only about $75,500 in revenue as of March 2024, about a year after that city unveiled the program, CBS News reported this month. Local police wanted to understand why the program was not effective in Aurora, but received no response, Edmondson said. I'd go with other programs in the state, such as in Fort Collins and Denver, that have shown the speed cameras to be effective, Edmondson said. Aurora police blamed several technical issues for the revenue shortfall during the pilot program, according to CBS News. The council must vote a second time on the item. That vote is expected at the next regular meeting, May 14th. Words you can't say in the legislature. Dems gave GOP a list of banned terms by Marissa Ventrelli of ColoradoPolitics.com. Colorado Republicans are accusing Democratic leaders of censorship, saying the latter have provided them with a list of words they are prohibited from using during floor debates. More specifically, Republicans claimed they were told not to say specific words, including illegal alien, during debates on immigration. House Democratic leaders could not be immediately reached for comment. It's the latest battle to erupt at the state capitol over speech, or more specifically, over words that the majority party deems offensive. In the past few months, Democrats and Republicans also clashed over using a transgender person's birth name, which activists refer to as dead naming. And just a few weeks ago, a group filed a federal lawsuit against Democratic lawmakers, alleging they suppressed, during public hearings, the free speech of those opposed to a measure that would provide a specific avenue for transgender individuals convicted of felonies to legally change their name. On Saturday, Representative Ron Weinberg, Republican of Loveland, spoke of his own experience as an immigrant, labeling himself as an illegal alien, during a discussion on House Bill 1280, which seeks to create a grant program for organizations to provide services for immigrants. During the debate, Representative Kyle Brown, Democrat of Louisville, who served as the debate chair, intervened and informed him that members are not allowed to use that term, even when referring to their own personal experiences. Brown instead suggested using other terms such as undocumented immigrant, arguing that calling a person illegal can be hurtful and offensive. Weinberg's colleague, Representative Gabe Evans, Republican of Hudson, faced a similar rebuke for using the term illegal immigrants. Representative Anthony Hartsook, Republican of Parker, also drew the gavel over what the majority believed to be an insinuation that the presence of immigrants unlawfully staying in the country could lead to a terrorist attack similar to September 11th. The illegal immigration crisis on the southern border has been spilling over into Americans' interior cities, notably in Denver, Chicago, and New York. Recently, Denver officials traveled to the Mexico border to tell shelter providers in El Paso, Texas, that the city will no longer have an open arms policy toward immigrants who arrive in Colorado's most populous jurisdiction after illegally crossing the border. The city has been considering major cuts to its public safety budget and other places in an effort to contain the fiscal toll of the crisis. Over the past 16 months, Denver has cared for more than 41,000 immigrants at a cost of roughly $68 million. And although the state and federal government have reimbursed Denver about $14.5 million, city taxpayers have assumed the bulk of these costs. Like their counterparts at the state capitol, Denver officials prefer a specific word to describe the immigrants, newcomers. On Monday, Minority Leader Rose Puglisi, Republican of Colorado Springs, said Republicans were shut down when using certain words, even though media organizations have used them or they are found in federal statutes. We are provided by House leadership a list of words that are offensive to the majority around illegal immigration, Puglisi said. Today, we stand together to say that the minority being silenced and censored in this chamber is against the values we hold dear as Americans and as Coloradans, she said. This isn't the first time we've been up here advocating for our voices to be heard. Puglisi announced that illegal immigration is a touchy subject, but argued that having difficult conversations is part of their duty as legislators. The voters of Colorado want us to have these uncomfortable conversations, she said. She noted a statewide poll earlier this month, which showed illegal immigration to be the paramount issue for Colorado voters. Roughly 2 in 3 view the unprecedented influx as a major problem lawmakers should address. Homelessness hit the number 2 spot. The founding of this country was based on hard conversations. Free speech is free speech for all of us in this chamber, she said. It's not the first time that Democrats have been accused of curtailing someone's speech around controversial subjects. Earlier this month, the Institute for Free Speech filed a lawsuit in federal court on behalf of Gays Against Groomers and the Rocky Mountain Women's Network to prohibit Colorado lawmakers from enforcing speaker restrictions against using misgendering and deadnaming language when referring to transgender individuals. Misgendering refers to assigning the wrong gender to someone, and deadnaming means using an individual's birth name rather than the name the person adopted as part of the gender transition. The lawsuit claimed that lawmakers prevented 2 people from speaking during House and Senate Judiciary Committee meetings in January and March because they had used a male pronoun for a transgender woman, the complaint said. Portions of one person's testimony, the complaint added, were scrubbed from the official audio recording of the Senate hearing. Created in 2022, Gays Against Groomers is a nonprofit organization comprised of Gays Against the Sexualization, Indoctrination, and Medicalization of Children, according to the group's Instagram page. The organization is known for campaigning against gender-affirming care, which includes social, psychological, or medical interventions for transgender individuals, such as hormone therapy and surgical procedures for minors, and criticizing drag queen story hour events. House Bill 1280 will most likely be read for a third time later this session. Fountain Valley residents see forever chemical levels drop, by Mary Shin of the Gazette. Fountain Valley residents are seeing the levels of forever chemicals in their blood drop over time, although the level of one substance remains high compared to people across the nation, results of recent studies show. Researcher Ann Starling with the Colorado School of Public Health presented the findings during a virtual meeting Tuesday that focused on early results from a multi-site forever chemical study with more than 1,000 participants from the Fountain Valley. Residents in Fountain, Security, Widefield, and surrounding areas drank water contaminated with forever chemicals from firefighting foams used on Peterson Space Force Base for years. All the communities are now treating the groundwater for the chemicals. However, the exposure led to elevated levels of the substances in their blood that can cause long-term health effects such as an increase in cholesterol levels, kidney and testicular cancers, among many other effects. Forever chemical is a blanket term for thousands of chemicals that remain in environment and human bodies and do not break down. Americans are exposed to them in fast food packaging and non-stick cookware. The large multi-site study includes participants from California, Massachusetts, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania. Fountain Valley boasted the second highest number of enrollees of all the sites, with 1,066. Pennsylvania led the way with 1,342 enrollees. This community really made a strong contribution to the power and impact of this national study, Starling said. The study seeks to determine the connections between forever chemical exposure and health effects such as liver damage, thyroid disease, high cholesterol, ulcerative colitis, and obesity. It will also study forever chemical effects in children, such as learning and behavioral issues. The analysis to determine those connections is just getting underway and will be forthcoming over the next 2 years, she said. The real work, as far as I am concerned, is the analysis, she said. However, she was able to share some broad results comparing recent sampling of Fountain Valley residents from earlier, smaller samples taken in 2018 and 2019. While the samples included different groups of people, the trend was clear. The median level is going down, which is exactly what you would expect following exposure ceasing from the water source, Starling said. Researchers are seeing a 40% decline in median exposure. However, levels of PFHXS remain higher than the national levels, she said. PFHXS is a substance associated with firefighting foam. While the human body cannot break down the chemicals, humans excrete forever chemicals slowly through urine and blood, Starling said. Women in the Fountain Valley overall have a lower level of forever chemicals, likely because the chemicals are leaving their body through their menstrual cycles and pregnancy, she said. Study participants have also received letters with their personal levels of forever chemicals that can inform their health care. Starling explained residents should add up the levels of PFAS in bold in their letter, and that total can help guide screenings clinicians should offer. Those with totals between 2 nanograms per milliliter and 20 nanograms per millimeter have a potential for adverse effects, especially in sensitive populations. Those with totals above 20 nanograms per milliliter have increase of risk of adverse health effects, the presentation said. More details can be found at NASEM-PFAS. To limit exposure to forever chemicals, residents can use stainless steel or cast iron pots and pans and avoid eating fast food because forever chemicals are used in the packaging, the presentation said. A second online community meeting is set for 6:30 to 7:30 on Wednesday. Residents can stream the presentation and ask questions during the meeting on Zoom. More information about the study can be found at co-scope.org. New spots in Monument and Palmer Lake worth checking out by Teresa Farney of the Gazette. There are a couple of new watering holes in Monument and a new neighborhood market in Palmer Lake worth checking out. Here's a look at what you can expect. Cloud Wine, Wine and Tapas Bar, 213 Washington Street, Monument, is an extension of The Bistro on 2nd, which opened mid-February. The Bistro owners, Katrina Van Rossum, Roby Simpson, and Vito Cruz, who is also the executive chef, created the wine bar in an adjacent building to The Bistro. The two establishments are connected with a flagstone patio and walkway. The small wine bar is divided into 3 intimate rooms with high and low seating. The walls are painted in shades of purple. The menu, executed by Cruz and his staff, is small, with dishes like shishito peppers, bacon-wrapped dates, Spanish prawn cocktail, and charcuterie board. The wine list is tight and focused, with specials offered on various days. The full bar has a cocktail menu and beers. Hours are 3 to 9 p.m. Tuesdays through Saturdays and 3 to 8 p.m. on Sundays. Sunday Fun Day features all-day happy hour pricing on food and half-price bottles of wine. Details, 719-418-5584 or on Facebook/bistros.cloudwine. Local Landing, Bar and Bites, 491 Colorado 105, Monument, formerly Ramen Chops Noodle Bar, opened in March and is a great place to have a drink from the full bar and enjoy some reasonably priced, well-prepared food from the small menu. Think bread and butter board, $10. Cup of soup with baguette, $5. Spinach dip with tortilla chips and naan bread, $9. Tzatziki dip with pitas, $8. Loaded smashed potato, $6. Chicken Caesar salad, $10. And cheesecake, $6. Hours are 2 to 10 p.m. Mondays through Thursdays, 2 p.m. to midnight Fridays, 11 a.m. to midnight Saturdays, and 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Sundays. Details, 719-481-4818. Calvert's Mini Market, 4 Colorado 105, Palmer Lake, upstairs above Bella Panini's, is owned by Stephanie Calvert. Calvert's opened in October with a small offering of mostly Colorado-sourced produce, fresh flowers, cheeses, meats, and baked goods. The little store that could is now brimming with full shelves, freezers, and refrigerators. Calvert takes pride in stocking local, top-quality brands and clean-labeled goods, whole foods without any artificial ingredients. A few of her purveyors include Taste of Life, The French Kitchen, Two Sisters Ranch, MK Ranch, Westcliff Cheese, and Yummy Lotus Jams. Hours are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., Tuesdays through Saturdays. Details, 719-661-3000 or calvertsminimarket.com. Private Chef and More. Janin Bourgeois has launched a new business as a private chef, cooking teacher, and culinary coach for hire. Many of you will remember Bourgeois from her days as a culinary instructor at the French Kitchen, where she always was full of enthusiasm and made time in the kitchen look easy. At a recent puff pastry cooking class where she was joined with Jay Webb of Lost Art Baking, she brought all of her usual energy to prepare a 5-course dinner. Webb demonstrates how he effortlessly prepared the complicated laminated pastry. Bourgeois kept the kitchen party lively while teaching us how to prepare the dishes that would be the supporting actors for the flaky puff pastry. The star of the show was Beef Wellington, which Bourgeois demonstrated how to prepare a whole beef tenderloin and cook it to perfect medium rare. When Bourgeois is not teaching classes, she is showing clients how to prepare meals with what's in their pantry, refrigerators, and freezer at the moment. She also is a private chef for dinner parties. Follow her on Facebook or email chefjanin@gmail.com. Piroshki Pop-Up. Piroshki Piroshki, an Eastern European-inspired bakery based in Seattle, is having a pre-order pop-up at Distillery 291, 4242 North Nevada Avenue, 5 to 7 p.m. May 8th. The bakery workers hand-make the order, and it is flash frozen and will be ready for pickup May 8th. Treat Mom to a buffet. Joseph's Restaurant and Bar, 1603 South 8th Street, will have a lavish buffet, 11:30 to 3 p.m. May 12th. For $55, you get an array of dishes like shrimp, green-lipped mussels, crab salad, eggs benedict, tortellini, chicken piccata, Alaskan salmon, steak a la Diane, assorted vegetable dishes, and desserts. Details, 719-630-3631 or josephsdining.com. DOJ reaches $139 million settlement with Nassar's victims. Detroit. The U.S. Justice Department announced a $138.7 million settlement Tuesday with more than 100 people who accused the FBI of grossly mishandling allegations of sexual assault against Larry Nassar in 2015 and 2016. A critical time gap that allowed the sports doctor to continue to prey on victims before his arrest. When combined with other settlements, $1 billion now has been set aside by various organizations to compensate hundreds of women who said Nassar assaulted them under the guise of treatment for sports injuries. The Gazette emailed and left a voicemail with the Colorado Springs-based U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee for reaction to the latest settlement, but did not hear back. Nasser worked at Michigan State University and also served as a team doctor at Indianapolis-based USA Gymnastics. He's now serving decades in prison for assaulting female athletes, including medal-winning Olympic gymnasts. Acting Associate General Attorney General Benjamin Meiser said Nasser betrayed the trust of those in his care for decades, and that the allegations should have been taken seriously from the outset. While these settlements won't undo the harm Nasser inflicted, our hope is that they will help give the victims of his crimes some of the critical support they need to continue healing, Meiser said of the agreement to settle 139 claims. The Justice Department has acknowledged that it failed to step in. For more than a year, FBI agents in Indianapolis and Los Angeles had knowledge of allegations against him, but apparently took no action, an internal investigation found. FBI Director Christopher Wray was contrite and very blunt when he spoke to survivors at a Senate hearing in 2021. The assault survivors include decorated Olympians Simone Biles, Allie Raceman, and Michaela Maroney. "I'm sorry that so many different people let you down over and over again," Wray said. "And I'm especially sorry that there were people at the FBI who had their own chance to stop this monster back in 2015 and failed." After a search, investigators said in 2016 that they had found images of child sex abuse and followed up with federal charges against Nasser. Separately, the Michigan Attorney General's office handled the assault charges that ultimately shocked the sports world and led to an extraordinary days-long sentencing hearing with gripping testimony about his crimes. "I'm deeply grateful. Accountability with the Justice Department has been a long time in coming," said Rachel Denhollander of Louisville, Kentucky, who is not part of the latest settlement, but was the first person to publicly step forward and detail abuse at the hands of Nasser. "The unfortunate reality is that what we are seeing today is something that most survivors never see," Denhollander told the Associated Press. "Most survivors never see accountability. Most survivors never see justice. Most survivors never get restitution." Michigan State University, which was also accused of missing chances over many years to stop Nasser, agreed to pay $500 million to more than 300 women and girls who were assaulted. USA Gymnastics and the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee made a $380 million settlement. Mick Gruel, an attorney who represented 44 people in claims against the government, said the $1 billion in overall settlement speaks to the travesty. A retired judge, Gregory Sleet, served as a mediator in the federal claims. "It took more than 6 years of tears, pain, and unrelenting effort by Nasser's victims, including many of our nation's most celebrated athletes, to shine the bright light of justice on the horrific conduct by senior officials in the FBI and demand accountability." Thank you for joining us for the Colorado Springs Gazette, read by Sue Frederick.
AfterSight presents your low vision resource of the day. Today, we would like to highlight Disability Law Colorado. This service provides legal protection and advocacy services for individuals with disabilities. Learn more by visiting www.disabilitylawco.org or calling 800-288-1376.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777. You're listening to AfterSight.